He's got a beautiful backswing.
Dad, oh, he got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Oh my God, you had to deal with the golf course people too!
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know?
Welcome into another edition of the 73rd Hole. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams with you as always. Going to have some fun today. Kelsey Klein's going to join us for a little bit, and then Taylor and I are going to talk about Tiger, his Golf Digest series that he did. We're going to get into all that, kind of our strategy, how we play the game, some of the stuff we talked about with Steve a couple weeks ago. So we've got a great episode on deck for you today. Make sure you find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Search 73rd Hole, and you will find us on all of those platforms. We would love to interact with you. We're going to start doing some more player profiles, things of that nature, so let us know who you would like to hear us talk about and break down and really take a deep dive on. So, we're going to have a lot of fun today. Find us on social media and let us know what we can do. We will give the people what they want here on the 73rd hole. And I think what the people want today is a little bit of Kelsey Klein action. Kelsey is joining us now. What's going on?
Man, I'm just driving in the car. How you guys doing and holding up in the COVID quarantine?
It's, to be honest with you, I think we're all kind of getting a little bored. Tyler, I don't know about you. I'm ready for a little normalcy.
Yeah, I'm ready. We kind of noticed it this last week when the NFL draft was on, you know, and how everyone got so excited about that just because, you know, there was actually something going on finally, you
know.
Did
y'all see the numbers it did, the draft?
What was it, 30-something percent higher or something like that than normally was?
I saw it was 55 million viewers throughout the 3 days.
Yeah, 55 million viewers.
Holy moly.
Crushed anything they've ever done in the past because everybody just wants to see something. So I'm assuming then that once we get to Tiger Phil in mid-May, because the first sporting event we know that's going to take place in any of the major American sports, NBA, MLB, whatever, is the Charles Schwab Challenge at Colonial on June 11th. But Tiger Phil is going to be probably a month before that. We don't know when it's going to be in May. But Kelsey, Tiger Phil, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, I mean, I'm all in. We got nothing better to do.
I'll watch the entire thing without question and probably order a pizza.
That's a good plan. Who you got winning? Taylor, who you got?
I think we saw it a little bit, you know, with the Tiger Phil match. What was it, over about a year and a half ago now? I mean, you know, there was so much expectation for it, and really just in lieu of the expectation, really just because of the form that they had when they played. And one thing that really irritated me about it was that it was pay-per-view. And this one will be a little different, I don't know, because, you know, this one will be for charity for the COVID-19 relief and all that.
It's on TNT.
It's on TNT, so there is no pay-per-view. Okay, good deal. But nevertheless, so like last time, you know, there wasn't supposed to be any commercials, pay-per-view, and there ended up being commercials, you know, so I mean, there were some things that were promised that weren't. For this, you know, I think it's going to be a very laid back deal. Like I said, you know, Tiger and Phil have already done something like this, and then you know, I'm more interested. I wonder if Tom Brady spent more time on his golf game or trying to learn the Buccaneers playbook over the last couple weeks.
It's a good question. Here's what I want to see, Kelsey. I kind of want it to be alternate shot. A lot of people don't want it to be alternate shot because, you know, you're playing with guys who aren't pros. But that's exactly why it should be alternate shot, because Brady and Manning will get Tiger and Phil in trouble. Tiger and Phil are two of the greatest creators getting out of trouble we've ever seen in the history of golf. Let's put these guys in the trees, get them in some trouble, and watch them work. That's what I want to see.
I'm with you guys. What I find interesting is, Taylor, you brought up the match, you know, a year and a half ago at Shadow Creek. I actually got it. I watched it. I went with Phil, I think, for a dinner bet with a buddy. And so I'm going to stick with Phil and Brady. Am I saying that right? Phil and Brady are on the team?
Yep, Phil and Brady, and then, Tiger and Peyton.
So I'll go with Phil and Brady for this one. It's on TNT. I'll be watching and probably have a dinner bet or two with a couple buddies hopefully on it. But I think from a viewership standpoint, I think it will be through the roof. Because of obviously Tiger and, I mean, the four guys involved are, you know, some of the greatest at their craft ever on both sides of the sport. But as you guys know, I mean, we're watching reruns from the 2006 NBA Finals. We're watching, you know, baseball games from 10 years ago, which, you know, interestingly enough, I was watching the, when the Heat beat the Mavericks in the 06 Finals, a couple of days ago, and it was pretty interesting to watch. And when I was thinking in my head, you know, now you talk about the last, you know, 5 or 6 years about the super teams and, you know, LeBron's trying to build a super team, or, you know, the Warriors built a super team. But one thing that I forgot about, I mean, if you look at that Heat team that won that title, you know, back in 06, that was the 05-06 season, I don't know how you wouldn't call that a super team. I mean, they had Shaq, they had Alonzo Mourning, they had Gary Payton, they had Dwayne Wade, they had Jason Williams, you know, White Chocolate that played at Florida. Udonis Haslem was on that team. And I think I mentioned Gary Payton. I wanted to make sure I mentioned him, but I, yeah, you know, I forgot.
That was young D-Wade, too. That was young, fresh legs D-Wade.
3 years in D-Wade, and Shaq was still probably – he was probably below 270 at the time, and lean and mean, but, you know, back in 06, you know, I didn't think about it a lot. But, I mean, that was a fantastic squad based on that era. So, and I'm sure everybody that's listening and you guys have been watching the Last Dance documentary on the Bulls, you know, final season with Jordan and Phil Jackson and all the guys, and it's been a nice filler on Sunday evenings for sure.
Yeah, I, whenever you said super teams, I was going to ask if either one of y'all were watching The Last Dance. Obviously, you are. Taylor, are you watching The Last Dance?
I need to get caught up on it. I've only seen a little bit of the first one, so no, okay. I'm a little behind. Okay. I'm trying to, like, kind of like you guys said, I probably watched the 2019 Masters probably 10 times now, right. You know, so I need to mix it up a little bit, but I'm still trying to catch up on some of the old things, kind of like you're saying. Like I said, I watched the 86 Masters a little bit ago, watched 2000 U.S. Open last night, as a matter of fact. So right now I'm just on the historical golf bug right now, so once I get off of that, then I'll jump back on the other sports.
Yeah, so spoiler alert from what happened in Sunday night's episodes on The Last Dance. Dennis Rodman, in the middle of the season in like January of 98, decided he needed a vacation. And did you see this, Kelsey? Were you watching Sunday night?
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah. So Taylor, he decides he needs a vacation in the middle of the season. Phil Jackson tells him, you can have 48 hours. He brought MJ in, and MJ, Phil, and Dennis Rodman had this conversation about how long of a vacation Dennis Rodman could take in the middle of the season. Phil said, 48 hours. Mike told Phil, he said, you ain't getting that man back in 48 hours. He's going to Vegas. So Dennis Rodman goes to Vegas. Dennis Rodman gets absolutely blitzed for like 5 days in Vegas. Carmen Electra's with him. MJ literally has to go to Vegas, go to Dennis Rodman's hotel room, drag him out of bed, take him back to Chicago for practice the next day. Dennis Rodman shows up at practice wearing his pajamas. Everybody else is in their Bulls like practice gear. He's wearing his pajamas, and that's like in the middle of the season. And I'm thinking to myself, what if this happened in 2020 in the age of social media?
There's no way it could happen right now. I mean, there's no way anything like that could happen. I mean, the player, did he end up missing games, or was it during the All-Star break, or what? Like, how many games did he miss? Because obviously 5 days.
They weren't real clear on that, Kelsey. Do you know how many games he missed while he was in Vegas?
They didn't say anything about it. You know, obviously he was late, and Jordan had to go find him. It didn't say. It was before the All-Star break, because once Pippen came back, you know, Dennis had been obviously probably put down a little more effort, because Scotty was gone for, what, 35 games. And so, Taylor, when you see it, you know, once Pippen came back, Dennis said, I gotta cut loose. So cut loose he did, and we know the ending of the season and how it went, so it all worked out. But I guess kudos to Phil Jackson for understanding his player and thinking a little bit outside the box.
Yeah, not only that, it was kind of funny to watch Dennis Rodman. The scene where they had the motorcycle, I don't know if you noticed this, Kelsey. They were standing in the parking lot, him and his motorcycle buddies, drinking Miller Lights, just like pounding Miller Lights in the parking lot. And then they all just hopped on their motorcycles to head through Vegas. And I'm like, that's some interesting footage that they got us. It was just some good old-fashioned late 90s drinking and driving.
Well, to switch gears on you guys, I don't know if you saw maybe on social media yesterday, there's a golf course in Addison, Texas called Merido Golf Club. Very nice facility. And they're hosting a tournament this weekend to benefit the caddies there. And there's some names that you guys would know that are going to be playing in it. And, I think it's a three-day event, I want to say. I know Scottie Scheffler's playing, Victor Hovland's playing, to mention a few. So there'll be a little bit of golf to pay attention to on that side of things as well.
Yeah, Harry Higgs, another tour pro that's going to play in that one. Tony Romo, former NBA guard Darren Williams is going to be in that one, so that'll be good. Parker Cootie, Austin Eckroat's playing in it. Cooper Dossey down at Baylor, who whenever we had McGraw on a few weeks ago, he talked a lot about Cooper Dossey and is looking forward to all that good stuff. Jordan Spieth, I don't think is going to play, but he is going to be there. Yeah, he's got something else going on. He's got a PGA Tour Players Advisory Council meeting on Tuesday. That's going to keep him from playing. So is that this week, Kelsey?
I thought so. No, I may misquote that. I want to say I saw the 28th in there. Which I take that back. That's today. So I may be a little bit off on the date.
It actually starts today. Yeah, I just pulled it up.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I wonder if we can get leaderboards or something on that. I wonder if we can gamble on that. Kelsey, I don't know if you're a sports bettor. I dabble, and by dabble, I mean I bet almost everything almost every week. And you talk about getting bored. I mean, March 11th was the last time I bet a game. I'm getting bored. I need to bet on the Merido Samaritan Fund charity event here in Dallas.
I understand. I'm not. I do a couple $5 contests on fantasy golf sometimes, but
DraftKings and stuff.
Yeah, a little bit of DraftKings for those $5 and $10 deals, which, you know, it's about impossible to win, but it's fun.
It is nearly impossible to win. I'll tell you who doesn't get any respect on DraftKings and is a great value every week. That's your guy, Taylor Gooch.
We were saying him every single week before the golf stopped, and like we talked about, he just kept making cut after cut after cut. And for so many players, DraftKings like yourself, Kelsey, you know, someone around the $7,000 mark or, you know, anywhere around there is a really good value, especially if you can make a cut. And Taylor does, makes a lot of birdies too, which in DraftKings, you know, is how you get your points.
Yeah, Taylor made 12 out of 13 cuts, and they still have like 7,100 on DraftKings, Kelsey. Me and Taylor couldn't figure it out. I don't know if it's because he wasn't a household name or whatever, but we're like, you know, we'll take the value every week. So maybe he comes back and gets a few more of those finishes like what he had at Arnold Palmer. He'll get himself up to the 8K range on DraftKings.
Those guys are clearly smarter than me, so I wouldn't claim to be able to know or to understand. you know, switching gears on the golf front, obviously, you know, some of the golf courses have been open around the state. Some haven't. I know a lot of them are opening back up. I get an email from Lincoln, you know, Lincoln East and West maybe opening up this Friday. I know the Tulsa golf courses are opening up. But, you know, what do you guys think about the way the major schedule is going to be set up for the fall?
Yeah, I don't know about y'all. I never really liked the PGA moving to May. I liked the PGA in August where it was. I didn't think there was a problem with that. And having the PGA August 6th through 9th now, I think it's going to be great. I don't know if they're going to end up getting to play it in California. You know, every state's handling it. Things a little bit differently, and California is going to be on the more conservative side as far as waiting to reopen, I think. So it depends on where they're going to be able to play, but I'm going to love the major schedule. I think that assuming football goes off without a hitch, we are going to be so overloaded with sports in the fall that it's going to make up for these few months that we haven't had any sports. So I'm all in on the PGA being in August. U.S. Open and Ryder Cup in back-to-back weeks in September is going to be phenomenal, so... Yeah, Taylor, I can't wait for really June 11th for the Colonial. I'm dialed in on golf coming back at all, but then having three majors in the fall is going to be awesome.
Yeah, June 11th right now is the kind of what we have our countdown for now at the Colonial, which luckily is just right down the road from us. So, you know, luckily kind of a little bit of hometown feel there, which would be really cool. Colonial is also, like we had mentioned before in some of our other shows, one of my favorite golf courses in the world. I agree with Colby. I didn't agree initially with the move to PGA. I've been one of those guys where, you know, there's four majors and there's four seasons of the year. So I figured, you know, you want to try to spread them out as much as you can. You know, it's like the Masters has spring. Obviously, the U.S. Open and the British Open are a little closer together. But, you know, that all works out normally. The best thing that I like about the schedule, Colby reiterated to earlier, is going to be the back-to-back U.S. Open and Ryder Cup each week. So then we'll be going from Wingfoot in New York. This is barring any course changes or anything like that because of the virus. So we'll be looking at going from Wingfoot, which is traditionally one of the toughest toughest U.S. Open setups. Had some 2006 when they had when Jeff Ogilvy won, when Phil doubled the last hole. We're looking at what, six or five or six over is the winning score. And then the next week you'd be going to Whistling Straits, which is a hard golf course, but at the same time, you know, it's a lot different than Wingfoot is. I mean, we saw Jason Day win at 20 under there, whatever, in the PGA Championship. So you'll get two of my favorite events of the year. Ryder Cup obviously comes every 2 years, and then the U.S. Open, which we kind of mentioned when all these other courses were playing hard, like the Bay Hill and the Honda. You know, it's kind of nice to see the pros struggle and see what it takes when they actually have to critically think out there.
Random fun story. I want to see if y'all remember this. Do you remember Jason Day when he won that PGA? This is, I don't know why, it's the shot that I most remember from him winning that tournament. I think it was on the ninth hole. He had like 130, maybe 140 in, and he hit a 25 handicap chunk
that went 20, 30 yards down the fairway. Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
Kelsey, do you remember that?
I do.
Yeah, I remember watching that, and I don't know why that stuck in my head so much. I think it's because we were watching, I mean, Jason Day at the time had an argument for best player in the world, and he hit a 20 handicap chunk that barely traveled down the fairway. I think maybe it made me feel good about myself. I don't know why, but that one stuck in my head. I wanted to see if y'all remembered that. Kelsey, are you going to try, I don't know, with no fans, anything like that at the Colonial, is that a tournament Taylor's going to play in? Are we all just going to be stuck watching on the app? I mean, what are your plans for trying to watch golf in the coming months?
Well, obviously, yeah, no, I don't think they're going to have fans. A few of the things I've read, so maybe the playoffs or maybe after the playoffs, but, you know, with the golf starting and Colonial not being too far away, I told Taylor, I said, man, I may just come down on whatever night you pick and have dinner. You know, we can have dinner with a couple of the guys and I'll just watch it somewhere at a hotel or, at a restaurant, because with no fans, obviously, it's either TV or the app. So it's going to be different, but, you know, no matter what the sport is right now, I would just say, you know, in a respectful way, forget the fans, just let them play. If that's in, you know, if that's in the same gym or different gym, if that's golf with no fans, I mean, whatever it takes for us to have sports and have some, you know, some shade of normalcy, I guess you would say, would be fantastic. So I'm all for playing no matter what it is.
And Kelsey, go ahead.
You know, T-Dub, you mentioned the Ryder Cup. We had a family cookout on Sunday at my house. My brother came over with his wife and my parents. And in my office at the house, I have a picture of AK. I know, obviously, we've talked about AK before, and I've gotten into a couple of conversations in this quarantine time about AK, which, you know, as we know, he's a shower to it himself from an interesting standpoint, the talent standpoint, an accomplishment standpoint. You know, it all goes without saying. But my brother looks up and sees the picture I have signed where he's carrying the flag. I had AK sign one a couple of years ago, which was nice of him. And my brother said, Anthony, you know, AK played the Ryder Cup? And I said, oh, yeah, bro. I said, that's the one where he ran over Sergio 5-4, and he ran over Robert Allenby, I believe, as well.
He smoked him. Yeah, I remember that match that he played with against Sergio. Sergio had hit a shot. I think it was way over to the right or something like that, and he was essentially right by this little cart path, walkway, bridge type thing. And Sergio, it was in a situation where he had to fake, act like he was going to hit it 90 degrees out to the right to get relief. And, you know, Anthony Kim is out there kind of disputing. And you could hear on the telecast or whatever him talking, AK said, whatever you need to do to win, man. And the next thing you know, he ends up beating him, you know, 5-4 or something like that. So I think Sergio, while he was trying to get away with the rules there, I think he how's the phrase go? You know, poke the bull in the ass or pull him by the ball, however that phrase goes. You know, you kind of you picked the wrong fight there, per se.
Right. So, he was barking up the wrong tree. But, you know, and getting in the conversation about AK, and obviously he's a very interesting individual, so talented, was very accomplished in his short, you know, career on tour, obviously, and a buddy of mine asked me about him. I don't know, it's a week ago. We're talking golf, and I said, man, you know, from a friendship standpoint, I want the guy to be happy. I'm happy for him in his life and what he's accomplished. But I said, as a fan of the game, as a golf fan, I said, I'll never get over it. You know, it's a little bit like
I don't think any of us will.
Yeah, it's a little bit like the Marcus Dupree, you know, obviously the 30 for 30.
Yeah.
Where, and even, you know, even into a little bit of a Bo Jackson scenario. I think Bo Jackson's hip injury happened when he was 28, if I'm thinking right.
Yeah, 28, I think.
You know, and he was, you know, he's obviously older than myself, but I watched him. I mean, I think I was watching the game when he was playing for the Raiders when the hip injury happened. But just one of those situations where there's so much talent, there's so much energy. They're interesting, you know, athletes and people that you just don't get to see them for long enough. You know, the talent, the world doesn't get to see the talent on display for an extended period of time like we've been able to see with Tiger and Jordan and LeBron and Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, you know, some of these guys, Phil. You know, even a guy like Adam Scott, you know, Charles Howell, you know, quietly as golf fans, you know, you just take it for granted that, you know, the guy's going to show up the next year and it's, you know, 10 years later, then it's 12 years later, then it's 17 years later, you know, and it's like I said, you know, AK is an interesting individual, obviously. A very nice guy, you know, kids and charity stuff. I know he did stuff under the radar that people would never know about, but he, from the straight golf standpoint, I'm with you guys. I'll never get over it.
You're exactly right there, Kelsey, about, you know, longevity, because not only do you need to be able to keep it, you know, physically with your health, but you need to be able to keep it mentally, you know, with your confidence and all that good stuff. And we bring up Anthony Kim. I think the thing that sticks out to me most, obviously, about, you know, obviously he went to OU and from around here, but we brought it up when we talked to you, know, the 11 birdies that he made at Augusta in 2009. And few things I want to go back onto that round. He had 11 birdies, did shoot 65, 7 under, so he didn't set the course record or anything like that. But 11 birdies still is the record. Didn't realize till I looked up the other day, he actually played with Rory that day, 2009. So that was,
I didn't know that.
So that was before, a little bit before Rory had got going on. So I actually pulled up AK's scorecard here. So
I wondered if you had which hole.
So we'll go through it here. So he birdied one, par two, which is a par five.
Par two, made 11 birdies in par two.
Birdied three, bogeyed four, birdied five, birdied six, birdied seven, birdied eight, bogeyed nine, doubled 10. Part 11, birdie 12, 13, 14, 15, part 16, part 17, and birdie 18.
What a ridiculous scorecard. What a ridiculous way to get to 65. So he played 9 through 11, 3 over?
Played 9 through 10, 3 over. So 9 through 11.
Played 9 and 10, 3 over.
Yeah. Played 9 and 10, 3 over and still shot 65, 11 birdies. And didn't birdie one of the par 5s either.
Yeah, that's correct. A par 5 that really is fairly easy to birdie. What day of the week did he do that? I'm just trying to figure out where the pin would have been on two. Do you know?
I want to say Friday, but I may be wrong.
I think it was Friday. So Friday is what? The back left pin? Is that the Friday pin?
On two.
Maybe the Thursday pin, and they kind of mix it around a little bit
from time to time.
On the first few days, generally the last nine's the same. But nevertheless, 11 birdies at Augusta, and it'll be tough to ever see that beat unless we see a year like the year that Jordan Spieth won, where 18 under was the winning score. Then there was four guys at 14 under or something like that, where the conditions are just unbelievably easy, which I hope we never see again.
Basically, where it's 75 and sunny every day, the course is like medium soft, and there's 0 miles an hour wind.
I think that's the only way we're going to see it. I mean, 11, like I said, 11 birdies out there, even though he had those couple bad holes. I mean, that's just completely unbelievable.
What's the most birdies you've ever made in a round? Kelsey, Taylor, what's the most birdies y'all have ever made in a round? Top of your head, do you know?
For me, let's see here.
Mine's 5. Mine's not that hard to remember because it's not that many. I made 5 in a round once.
I want to say, I'm thinking, I had a 61 at Jimmy Austin. Way back, just, you know, playing a fun round, and I know I made a bogey, so 11 under. I take that back. I had like a 100-yard hole out, so that would have been 10 birdies, a eagle, and a bogey. I'm gonna say 10.
Now, I thought Taylor told us on his podcast that he had the Jimmy Austin course record with 62. Did you beat him with that 61, or is he just disregarding your 61, saying that he has it?
No. Actually, I think AK, you know, he was in college at that time when I did that. I think he had a 61 maybe within a month of when I did. But Taylor's was a tournament round. Ours were just, you know, funsies. And as you guys know, on course records at most places, it has to be an official event. And so, no, I could not take credit for the 61. I want to say we were playing a mixture of the tees, you know, and obviously in tournaments, I think that probably happens as well. But I want to say the tees were back-ish, or maybe a mixture, but that's been, golly, that's been 14, 15 years ago, so I couldn't say for sure.
Taylor, most birdies you made?
I think the most I have is I've shot 7 under on a short course. I made 9 birdies, or I either made 8 birdies and an eagle, something like that. But yet it's a Brown 6,100-yard course. So, you know, it's not like Jimmy Austin or anything like that. On an actual long course like that, Jimmy Austin or Oak Tree, anything like that, probably 7, I would say, somewhere around
there. We played the greens once last summer. You made 8 in a round of the greens last summer.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I do. I remember that. Yeah, and we I can't remember what tees we were playing. Sometimes the hole looks bigger. Sometimes it looks like it's a 5 gallon bucket. And sometimes you look like you're putting into a pin needle. So
yeah, Kelsey, we had Reen Gibson on with us last week, and he told the full story of his 55 the whole day, how he was feeling the whole day. I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to that, but it's a good story, man. 55 is, I mean, it takes a heater to get to 55.
What's interesting about that day? I was actually playing at Jimmy Austin that day back in 2012.
Yeah, I remember it was in the summer. Me and my teammates, we were sitting at Chick-fil-A when we got the text, and the only reason we believed is because, like we brought up in the story, he had shot in like 60, 61, or 62 his previous two rounds out there. So it was a little bit easier to believe, but at the same time, it was one of those things where you'll never forget where you're at. So yeah, it was in May or June of 2012.
Sure, and so to add to that, I got a text on about the fifth hole at Jimmy Austin from a mutual friend of myself, and Reens, who was playing in the group, Ryan Munson, who's a local guy in the financial world, great golfer, fantastic dude, plays a lot of golf, but he starts texting me after 9 holes of the round. And I said, listen, man, I want to hear about it. Keep letting me know. You know, obviously don't let Reen know that you're texting. So I got a text basically after every putt went in on that back nine. And I don't remember who I was playing with, but I was probably obviously feeding information, you know, over to them as the round was going on. I mean, it was 12-footer went in, 8-footer went in, 10-footer went in, 15-footer went in. And what's most interesting, and you guys may have caught this, I haven't been able to listen to Rian's podcast, and he may have mentioned this, but the story that I remember as being even more impressive about what he did is it had rained the night before, so the range was closed. They started on number 10, and he parred the first hole.
Yeah, we definitely got to that point. Yeah, he's like you said, no range balls. Like I said, no, really just hit a few putts, that thing. And
he said he got there 10 minutes before the tee time.
10 minutes before, yeah.
Sure.
Exactly. And you played River Oaks before, haven't you, Kelsey, numerous times?
Absolutely, and as you guys know, it doesn't matter where you are, what the situation is, what the yardage is, or any of that. He went 16 under the next 17 holes, which, as we all know, has never been done before and may never be done again. You know, knock on wood for him and kind of the state, that course. And it, you know, I remember Ryan Munson, as I mentioned, being in the group, you know, when they sent it in to Guinness Book of World Record, you have to have it verified and some of those things. So that was a neat process that those guys got to go through. And, you know, 16 under 55 is a world record.
And one of the, we mentioned about AK, you know, he parred one of the par fives when he had his 11 birdies. I thought it was interesting that Ryan also parred the, at the time it was his 15th hole, but it's the 6th hole out there at River Oaks. A real narrow par five, but still only about a little over 500 yards. So for him to be able to shoot 16 under with parring the first hole and then parring a par five after that, whoo boy, that's, I mean, how can you play the other 16 holes any better?
Yeah, that's very, very impressive. Kelsey, you're the man. I know you got to get going. We appreciate you coming on with us. We'll have to do this again before Colonial. Send our best to Taylor, and we look forward to watching him and the rest of the guys get back out on the course.
You bet, fellas. I appreciate it. Anytime.
Kelsey is absolutely the man. We appreciate him joining us here again on the 73rd hole. He's been incredibly gracious with his time, and we love having him on, so we'll try to do it again before the Colonial, as the PGA Tour is just about set to get up and running. We should have results on Tiger and Phil by then as well. Taylor and I are actually going to come back, and we're going to keep this thing rolling. We've got a lot that we want to get into. We've both watched the Tiger Woods Golf Digest, the My Game, the 12-part series that Tiger did. We've both watched that. I want to get into that a little bit and just talk about the game of golf. So that's coming up next. We'll be back. Stay with us here on the 73rd hole.
When something the size of a golf ball hits your roof, you need to call McRae Roofing. McRae Roofing is Oklahoma's designer roofing service specialist. For years, Jeff McRae and the experienced team at McRae Roofing and Exteriors have served fellow Oklahomans by helping them with their roofing needs. McRae Roofing uses only top quality materials and professional crews to make sure that each job is done right, so it will give you the years of service, security, and protection you need from the unpredictable Oklahoma weather. McRae Roofing offers residential and commercial roofing, ventilation services, and custom copper designs. McRae Roofing is dedicated to exceeding the homeowner's expectations. It's not just a roof, it is your home's crowning glory. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000. That's 405-692-4000. Make sure to also visit their website at mcrayroofing.com. That's M-C-R-A-Y roofing.com. Don't get caught with a leaking roof. Contact McRae Roofing for your free inspection today.
Welcome back to the 73rd hole. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams still with you. Appreciate Kelsey Klein joining us. Great as always. Enjoyed that conversation. And now, Taylor, I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, you and I have both watched this Tiger Woods My Game, this Golf Digest. It's a 12-part series that he did about his practice, his fitness, his mental game routine. He looked back at his 2019 Masters, the early years, all this stuff that Tiger took us through. And I don't know what some of your biggest takeaways were from it. My biggest takeaway from the whole thing was that Tiger Woods loves, loves, loves his hands. I don't know if you noticed throughout how often he talked about his hands. It's like every time they ask him how he did something, he's like, well, I just trust my hands.
It's just what he felt at the time. And, you know, he'd say, the biggest, we talk about our biggest takeaways. And for anyone who isn't aware, me and Colby are the two biggest Tiger Woods fans you'll ever meet. And
we are fanatics.
And for me, I've grown playing golf since I could crawl. You know, I've been studying Tiger for however long, and there were things in this 12-part series that I didn't even know or comprehend. So even if you are a Tiger fan, there are things in this series that you will learn, and especially if you don't know much about Tiger or know about, you know, kind of how he thinks or how he practices. I mean, it's going to be tremendous the amount of knowledge you'll get from this. Kind of describe one of the things that got out to me, and one of my friends, Cody Burrows, we were actually talking about this the other day, that stuck out.
Shout out, Cody.
And just truly phenomenal, just to even process how he does this is crazy. So all of us growing up in Oklahoma, we know what it's like to play with wind, and we'll be over a par three or an iron shot, and we'll be playing the wind, and, you know, we'll be gusting, you know, for someone, you know, me and Colby, you know, we'll be tossing up grass two or three times. Well, okay, well, this time it's coming, you know, off the right and a little into. Now, yeah, toss it up.
I played yesterday at Golf Club of Edmond. Wind was blowing about 25 out of the south.
And it's not blowing the same direction all day either, you know.
Oh, God, no, it was swirling.
It's going to be swirling every time, and you know, I'll get more into this later, but nevertheless, you know, he's throwing up grass, and he's got, you know, it may be coming in, you know, a little bit into him off the right. It may just be directly off the right. So basically what Tiger said was he would have two shots in his head that he'd want to play. He would, depending on the wind, whether at the time it was into him a little bit or if it was just dead cross. And so what he'll do is he'll get over the ball, do his little waggles, look at the ball. Then right as soon as he's about to hit, he'd feel that gust of wind and then go with the shot he wanted to hit from there and hit it. Right immediately.
Which is insane.
For someone like me who would be debating on those, because I would have to aim at different spot. I would aim at a different spot. I would try to hit it harder, a little harder. I would play at a different position in my stance. It just goes to show, like you mentioned, the feel in his hands. You know, he's just able to manipulate the ball so much differently than other players. And I was watching, I can't remember the name of the podcast, but it's the Colt Knows podcast, and he has one of his other buddies on there. And they have some really great guests on there, Gary McCord, Pat Perez. And one of them I watched on there was John Rahm. And he said to those guys that, even to this day, like whenever all the TaylorMade guys go out there, so you're seeing Rom, DJ, Jason Day, Tiger, Matt Wolf, Morikawa, all these guys, and Rom just basically said Tiger just makes those guys look like fools when it comes to irons. He works the ball so much better. His ball control, tightness of flight, literally you'll hear him talk.
His trad.
The trad, exactly what I was about to say.
Tiger loves his trad, too.
The trad, yeah. So he'll talk about the 9 different shots he wants to hit, and in the documentary especially, he talks about the, you know, he visualizes the ball going through a window, per se. And
So when Taylor says the 9 different boxes, like a tic-tac-toe board is essentially correct. What Tiger visualizes on the range. So he's got 9 different windows that he can hit the same club in. Low draws, high draws, medium flight, low punch, stingers up the middle. So that's what he's talking about with the grid, is like a tic-tac-toe board, basically.
Exactly, yeah. So there's 9 options. So low, mid, high, and then draw, straight, fade, and then some incorporation of those two. And so that leads to 9 shots. And that's one thing that he really preached on with when he was with Haney. And, you know, one thing also, too, that I thought was interesting about the documentary that I caught on to, it was a section where he talked about his equipment. And, you know, Haney got a lot of slack when he was with him about how Tiger was missing fairways and, you know, he didn't have a real good driver swing. And Tiger had admitted during that stretch, you know, because that was kind of when the driver shape was changing drastically. You know, he went from using a steel shaft to a graphite shaft. The head was a lot bigger, you know, in 2000 and 2002 when he was using that Nike driver. 2000, he had that small Titleist driver. Now all of a sudden he's going to a bigger, you know, taller face Nike driver. And he mentioned how he had a tough time getting used to the way that it looked and also the tee height from it. And so one thing that, you know, and I was a big critic of Haney, you know, especially not necessarily for what he did with Tiger and his swing, but, you know, I read the book that he wrote about Tiger and, you know, I thought it was a little, you know, kind of threw some shots at him per se that he didn't need to. But I will defend Haney in the sense that, you know, a lot of people blame him for the way Tiger swing, but Tiger admitted in there, you know, it was maybe more of a confidence issue with the driver just because he didn't trust the way that it looked more as opposed to, you know, the way that his swing was.
Yeah, I want to go back to what you were saying about the wind with Tiger. Like on a par three, for example, and I'm going to use yesterday's round because it was in a strong wind that I played yesterday. So the 10th hole at Golf Club of Edmond, I don't know when the last time you played out there was. It's a
par three, right?
Par three, narrow green. It's downhill about 50 feet. You're teeing off from the top of the hill. You're going downhill about 50 feet. And with a south wind, the wind's kind of down off the right. So it was my box. So I stood up and I mean, I'm throwing grass up 5-6 times because play slow. We've got a foursome in front of us. We've got two couples in front of us. So two men, two women in front of us. We're a threesome. So we're not going anywhere fast. So I'm taking my time. I'm throwing grass up and I cannot figure out for the life of me if it's crosswind or into the wind. So it's like 168 yards. So I pull out 8-iron. I step up. I get over the ball. I'm almost ready to go. And I'm like, I can't do this. This is going to sail over the back. So I walk to the cart to go get my 9-iron. Because, like, Tiger, he's got these two different shots he wants to play. I don't have two different shots I want to play. I've got to hit whatever club is going to travel that yardage. So I go to get – and as I'm walking to the cart, I feel a gust of wind come straight across and hit me in the face. I'm like, okay, if that's the wind, I can hit the 8. So I walk back up. I hit the 8. Pins in the front. I hit it to, like, the back fringe. I'm, like, 80 feet from the flag. And Tiger having that ability to essentially carry whichever club can fit both of those scenarios – to the box with him, and as he stands over the ball, decide which shot that he wants to hit. I don't know how you do that. My alignment is different depending on what kind of shot I'm going to hit. Whether I choke up or down on the club is depending on what kind of shot I want to hit. I was blown away hearing Tiger talk about the different shots that he has in his mind as he steps up. That, and then listening to him talk about drawing, like putting hook spin and cut spin on like little chips, like actual chips that you're only carrying 10 feet. He talks about hooking and cutting these little baby chips, which you and I went out and practiced for like, we had a good practice. We practiced for almost 5 hours on Friday. We hit a bunch of little wedges and chips and stuff. And it's kind of fun to try to do that just to break up the monotony of practice. It's kind of difficult to draw a 30-yard shot, but that's what Tiger's trying to do to some of these pins.
Yes, it is, and I'll get to the chip thing. Just I want to reiterate to what you were talking about with the wind because I think this is extremely important,
especially for people in Oklahoma. We get so many gale force windy days.
Exactly, and you mentioned it right there. I kind of think what you're doing, you know, because like you said, you're throwing up grass. You know what you're doing. You went back to the cart to get a new club to come back. You know, so obviously you have some sort of second guessing in your mind what's going on. Correct?
Indecision, absolutely.
Your confidence isn't there, and so. This is something I hadn't really thought about until we actually just talked about this. You know, while in our mind it's a, you know, oh my God, two shots, you know, which one are we going to hit? You know, Tiger in his head, he has those two shots and he knows that which one he's going to pick is going to be the right one. So he has that confidence in his mind just right there that what he's doing is the right thing. So
because he knows that he can adjust his shot to whatever he's feeling at the exact moment.
Exactly.
Which is easier said than done.
It's so phenomenal. But if you can, whatever you can do to give yourself that confidence that he has, like you said, you know, if you're just sitting there guessing, don't know what you do, whatever you have to do to make sure that whatever you're doing, you're 100% committed to is the way that you're going to have success. And that's how Tiger mentioned that he's been so good at ball position. And one thing also that Tiger mentioned about the wind that I thought was interesting that I hadn't really thought about is, you know, we talk about the wind swirls, you know, and it will, you know, 1 minute it may be going this way, 1 minute it'll be going this way. But he made a good point I hadn't thought about was that, you know, the wind is swirling, you know, on the tee box, but also the wind swirling up by the flag. So, you know, what was your shot? 160 something yards?
Yeah, like 168.
Yeah. 170 and a little downhill too. So there's going to be a lot of wind factor here. So, you know, the wind can be doing something different on the tee box than it is on the flag. And so I think it's extremely important to every single surrounding that you can find the win for, look at it. You know, obviously, you know, flags sometimes, you know, a lot of courses around here, there'll be trees around. So obviously look at that kind of stuff. And you know, on tee boxes, if you can keep the ball lower than trees, the wind won't affect it as much. But, you know, look at tall flags. You know, you see there, if there's an American flag in the distance, or, you know, if you're playing a course like the, like your home course, the greens has a lot of houses around it, you know, there'll be flags sticking up in the back. And
one thing Tiger talked about, look at the water.
See which direction
the water's moving. Yeah,
you're exactly right. And there's just so many different ways that you can look to judge the wind. And like I said, just trying to find the most confidence that you can, and then you know, doing what you can to figure out which way the wind is blowing is going to make your ball improve a lot better. And we mentioned this with Steve Ball. You know, when he was on, you know, it's not height that hurts you in wind; it's spin. You know, it's not, yes, it's not how high you hit it. It's going to be the amount of spin you generate. So, you know, these are all factors, you know, from the things that you've learned from our podcast that are going to be able to help you, especially in these Oklahoma conditions. Going back to the chip spin thing that I find very interesting is that I've watched a lot about, you know, how Tiger gets his equipment fit and everything. And anyone who knows Tiger plays one of the spinniest balls out there. I mean, it's, you know, if we go out and try to play it with just our, I mean, it's going to just shoot up straight in the air. It's going to feel like a ballata almost, in a sense. It's just going to like upshoot. And it's, but Tiger needs that because he has the feel to where he can curve it how much that he wants to. And he mentioned, you know, playing with the ballata ball growing up, he was able to learn how to, you know, take spin off of the ball, which is something that, you know, a lot of us, you know, except for me, besides wedges, that's something that I don't, you know, try to do. You know, I'm trying to get the ball to stop as fast as possible with mid and long irons, for sure. So, you know, for him able to learn that was very important. That's why he plays that spinny ball now. And the chip spin, I think, you know, is something that allows him to take his short game to the next level. He said something about playing Augusta a few years ago that goes along the same line of where I'm going here. So he mentioned that, you know, he was able to curve the ball at Augusta against the grain of the fairway to where he was able to hold the fairway more. You know, in a lot of instances, like me growing up, you know, I'm like, oh man, this fairway is running right to left. I'm going to hit this big draw down there, you know, and I'm just going to ride this slope and I'm going to hit it far, you know,
just bombing.
We're going to hit in bombs, as Phil would say. Yes. And so, you know, and so he mentioned, you know, being able to hold the fairway, you know, by working the ball against it. And so when he's able to put these chip spins on it, you know, if he's putting draw spin on it, if he has, you know, a shot, you know, the green severely sloped left to right, and he's able to hit a little bit of draw spin on it, he doesn't have to play as much break up the hill and let it run down. You know, he's not letting the contours and the bumps and everything else, the exterior factors, get in his way, because he's able to manipulate the golf ball in a manner that, like I said, most of us can't do. And like I said, we were out there trying it, and, you know, we're putting off some pretty nice grass. And even, you know, if we try to set the ball down, you can't hit these shots, you know. So, I mean, I think Tiger has the realization, you know, even if he's out there on turf, he has a bad lie, he's not going to try some of these things, you know. But if he has a good lie with the spinny ball that he has, and he can manipulate the ball, that, I mean, that's what's made him to be the GOAT that he is.
Yeah, a lot of things have gone into making him the GOAT that he is. The GOAT of roofing season, that's McRae Roofing. We've actually got some weather coming in this afternoon. So McRae Roofing needs to be on your radar. Their commitment to craft is what defines McRae Roofing and exteriors. This afternoon, saying it could be golf ball, maybe baseball size hail in central Oklahoma. Go ahead and give McRae Roofing a call. Locally owned and operated, Jeff McRae, friend of the show here on the 73rd hole. And he views your roof like a canvas. His team's sole purpose is to create you a masterpiece of a roof, which brings out the beauty of your home and its surroundings, a beauty that will last for years to come. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000 or visit them online at McRaeRoofing.com. Yeah, you mentioned Colby Powell and Taylor Williams with you, by the way, here on the 73rd hole. You mentioned our conversation with Steve Ball, and I've listened back to that one a couple times. Usually whenever we do a podcast, I'll listen back to it one time, see what it sounds like after, you know, we've gotten everything produced and music in and all that good stuff. But I've listened to the one with Steve. I've listened it back a couple times because the stuff that he talked about with mental game is stuff that I've really been working on with myself. And not only that, the conversation we had with him, but also the conversation we had with Taylor Goose, where he talked about having a game that travels. You mentioned me being a member at the Greens here in Oklahoma City. It's my home track. Where I play. I've figured out through playing 100 rounds at that course exactly where to miss it on every shot, the safe play, how to hit every shot with every wind, and I've kind of just got the course figured out. But then when I would go somewhere else, I would shoot 84. and it was getting really frustrating. So I really, the last couple times I played course in Chickasha last week, Bushwood, and then I played Golf Club of Edmond yesterday and had pretty good rounds at both. Really good rounds, I would say, at both, especially considering the wind I played in yesterday. And I think a lot of that has to do with focusing on having a game that travels, not just being able to play one golf course. Because it's like, are you a good golfer or have you mastered a course? And I didn't want to be the guy who had just mastered his home course but couldn't play anywhere. Not only that, Steve's mental game stuff, not having outcome thoughts, just, you know, not getting frustrated. And a big thing that Steve talked about, and if you haven't listened to our episode with Steve Ball, you need to, and you really should probably go see him. He talked about in our minds, whenever we hit a bad shot, tell yourself, okay, that's one bad swing. That's one bad swing. I'm not playing bad. I made one bad swing. And I think I've been telling myself that whenever I hit a bad shot lately, and that has been helping me a ton mentally to know, okay, that was just one bad swing. I don't have a bad round going.
Yeah, and you know, we're going back to a previous podcast, so I'll mention another one. You know, when we talked about Rian Gibson, how he shot his 55, you know, he said, yeah. Hey, you know, he was always under the mindset of, you know, you play a hole at a time, you know, and, you know, there's different schools of thoughts, you know, like Tiger and Jack both say, you know, they have a score in their head that they want to shoot before the day starts a lot of times, you know, whenever tournaments, And I used to be that way a little bit when I was way younger. I was steered away from that. One reason is because I was actually watching, I was watching Golf Central one night or whatever, and LPGA event had finished, and Lydia Ko was on there, and she was talking to the announcer. She said, before the round, I said I need to shoot 67. I shot 67, and I lost. I got beat. So,
yikes.
You know, so, you know, for me, and also one of those things too, like you tell yourself, you know, I want to shoot 65 today, you know, and it's par 70. What if sudden you're 500 through seven holes. What are you going to do? Par the next 12 or 11? You know, just yeah, because
you're on cruise control, you know, you've get it in the clubhouse.
You've already met your goal, you know. So, you know, that's why that's what allowed Rian and some of these other great players, you know, to be able to shoot those low scores because they're playing a shot at a time. You know, they're playing the, you know, the 18th hole, you know, no different than they would be if they're five over as opposed to two, you know, or how many ever under they are. You know, whenever you're in a tournament situation, you know, coming down the stretch, things can change. You know, if you're one shot back or you're a few shots ahead, you know. So, in tournament play, when you're playing against someone, your management can change. But overall, you know, you need to just play every hole like you should. And Colby had mentioned, you know, he had, you know, wanting to have a game that travels, you know. And one of the things I think was really good about what you just said there, Colby, is you've had the self-awareness to, you know these things and to realize them. You know, so you realize that your mental game was struggling when you went to these different courses. And, you know, for anyone who doesn't have a game that travels, you know, if you're someone like Colby who plays at a course really well and doesn't go, you know, there can be a lot of different reasons as to why. You know, maybe you're used to the way that holes look at the course that you're playing and you don't like the way that, you know, your driver shapes on the other courses that you go to. You're not confident on the tee box. Maybe your course management is a lot better at the course that you play at and you know where to go, and as opposed to go out there, you just aim at a, you know, a big spot in the fairway as opposed to being, you know, pinpointing it down. Maybe it's because, you know, the grass texture is different and the green speeds are different. One thing that was really important and really taught on to me when I was a younger player, especially when to play college golf and all these different tournaments, is you have to get used to different green structures and different greens. Not even necessarily, you know, different, you know, like Bermuda, bent, different types of grass is extremely important. But even just, I mean, just going from a course like the greens that you play to Golf Club of Edmond even, I mean, there's going to be differences in those greens that you play. And even Bushwood, of course, down in Chickasha, one of the best nine-hole courses, I believe, in the country. You know, I mean, the greens are...
Which the greens now are really good down there,
greens are extremely good. So the greens are good at every single place, these three courses that you go to, but yet they're drastically different in different ways. There's some are flatter, even the breaks are going to break a little differently. The way the chips react, the way the half wedges react is going to be different. So just being able to realize these things, and, you know, it's not going to be fixed. Like you said, Colby said, you know, if he didn't think about these, you know, these mental things or these reasons why his game was struggling when he traveled, he would just continue to struggle. So he was able to pinpoint where it was, where he needed to get it fixed, and he's starting to see improvements from there. So, you know, anyone out there who are having some of these similar issues, you know, just do a little bit of self-analyzing and try to be a realist about it. I mean, if you're going to lie to yourself, you're not going to see any results. You know, it's like, I remember when I was younger and I try to keep my stats, I was the type to where, you know, if my ball was on the fringe, you know, and, you know, and I had how many ever feet, you know, I'd say I hit the green, you know, because I used my putter, you know, because I wanted to say I hit more greens. And looking back on it, I wish I would have done it the opposite that way. I could have told myself, you know, you didn't hit that green. You need to be better than that, you know. know. Instead, I wanted to, you know, use it as more of a proving metric as opposed to improving my own game. And I think, you know, the more that you can lead towards, you know, just forgetting what other people think and just try to make yourself better and make your score lower, it's how you're going to get, is how you're going to better scores, just like Colby has done over these last couple of weeks.
Yeah, here's a fun story from yesterday. So, you know, do you remember the 15th green at Golf Club of Edmond? So the 15th green, it's a short little hole.
The short par four drivable, yes. Lot of slope off to the left of the green.
Yeah, it's like 290. Uh-huh. You get up to the green, and the green's two-tiered. It's narrow front to back, kind of a little bit wider left to right, but there's basically a ski slope in the middle going from right to left. It's two-tiered. So pins at the bottom of that slope, and I hit my second shot out to the right on the top of the slope. So I've got about a 30-footer for birdie. And so I know, and south wind's behind us at 25 miles an hour going down this hill. And we're talking about a ski slope in the middle of the screen. So I'm like, I just got to get this putt to the top of the hill and let it die down. So I get this putt, barely creeps over the hill, rolls down, misses the hole by like 4 inches. Wind is really gusting at this point. Blows about another 25 feet, gets into the fringe. Well, once you're into the fringe, it's basically a false front. So I had a 30-footer for birdie. And then for my fourth shot, I had to go back to the cart and get my wedge. I had like 40 yards in for my fourth after having a 30-footer for birdie. And, you know, I didn't get mad, didn't get upset. I just, you know, chipped up there like 6 feet. I got it above the hole on my chip, so I missed the next one. Had to lag the 6-footer. But it's just stuff like that. That was kind of funny because one of the other guys in our group was out to the right of the green and had to chip, and he chipped it up to the top of the slope, rolled down, rolled off the other side of the green. So learning that there are things in the game of golf that you can't really control is important too, I think. Because sometimes things just happen, and it might cost you a shot. It might cost you two shots, but it wasn't really something you could control. I mean, sure, I could have hit my approach shot on the bottom side of the hill. That's what I was trying to do. I missed right. It's part of the game. So understanding that you can't control things sometimes and not letting it get to you, I think is important.
Yeah, and you make a really good point there, you know, about, you know, that kind of leads to what we're talking about course management and game that travels. You know, obviously, like you said, you were trying to miss on the right side of the hole, or I mean, on what I mean by right
the is correct
the correct yeah. side, yes. So you were trying to miss left of the hole.
I was trying to miss on the low side of the hole.
The low side of the hole, yes, exactly, where not only would you be uphill, but you'd also be into the wind, which is extremely important, yes. You know. And so someone like, you know, if you're a member at a course and you play the course all the time, you play the course with a similar wind, you're going to know those things. You're going to know, oh man, that green slopes severely, that's going to be downwind. I don't want to be there, you know. And sometimes you may go to a different course and you don't necessarily know those things. You don't know, you know, the severity of it. And, you know, me and Colby, we were talking a lot the other day, you know, just about, you know, just little ways that you can improve your game. We talked a lot about, you know, picking your target lines correctly, you know, making sure that you're aiming at the right stuff, you know, because when you get to your home course where you're a little bit more confident, you know, it's a lot easier just look down and know that you made that swing 100 times, you know, and it's going to go where it needs to. When you go to a course you haven't played before, you know, you might not necessarily be as confident as you need to be. And if you don't know where you need to aim, you're just kind of picking a target out there. And let's say you're aiming at, you know, let's just say I want to aim at a bunker out there, a fairway bunker. Well, you know, you look at an actual bunker. Well, that bunker's probably 20 yards wide. So are you aiming at the left side of the bunker, the middle of the bunker, the right side of the bunker? Because, you know, whatever that is, that's going to be, if it's 20 yards wide, you aim at the middle or you aim at the right. That's, I mean, like, you could have a 20 yard difference between where you're aiming. And next thing you know, you could push it depending on where you're aimed. You know, if there's trouble right and you aim at the left side of the bunker, you push it 5 yards, you're going to be fine. You aim at the right side of the bunker, you push it 5 yards, you're in the water and you're dropping. Next thing you know, you just wasted two shots, all because you didn't aim at the right target.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we got some really good practice in this last Friday. And another thing that Taylor showed me that I was doing over the weekend, just kind of experimenting, was getting on Google Earth. And I don't even know how you figured out to do this, but get on Google Earth. You type in wherever you want to look at. Like, I typed in the Greens Country Club. And then in the bottom left, you can click measure distance and change it to yards. So I could go to all the tee boxes, click where I start, click where I want it to land, or click how far it is to carry a bunker, and I can get the exact carry yardage. And you said you were doing this, and I was like, okay, whatever. And then I got on Saturday or Sunday morning, whenever it was, my wife was reading, and I just got on the computer and was playing with it. It's addicting. I mean, you can spend hours on there going from golf course to golf course, looking at how far, courses that you play regularly, looking at how far all the carries are to different things, and thinking, am I playing that hole smart? Or am I trying to bite off more than I could chew? Or am I not being aggressive enough? Because that's another thing I talked to you about. I want to make more birdies. I've set a goal for myself. I'm a 5 handicap. I want to make 4 birdies around. That's the goal I've set for myself. Yesterday I made 3. This is a 25-mile-an-hour wind. I can live with that. But I'm trying to be more aggressive so I can make more birdies, because that's, I mean, for a guy like me, making 4 birdies as opposed to 1, just because of the momentum and everything of the round, I mean, that might be the difference between shooting 82 and shooting 76. even though it's only a couple strokes, you feel better about yourself when you make more birdies. So just kind of stuff like that. But the Google Earth stuff I thought was really cool.
Yeah, and I want to go into the Google Earth just one second, but I want to go back to the point you just made about making more birdies, and I want to share this with everyone out there who may be, because there's a lot of misconceptions out there in golf, you know, and a lot of times people think that, oh, you know, someone shot a really low score because they made a lot of putts, you know, or they just putted out of their mind, and a lot of times that is the case, you know. I mean, they'll make, you know, a couple long putts, but this is... Look at the PGA Tour strokes gain statistics here, okay? So let's imagine you were in a contest to flip a coin, right? Would you, if you were flipping a coin and you had a 95% chance to win the bet or a 20% chance to win the bet, which one would you like more, Colby?
I would like the 95% chance.
95% chance, yes. Okay. And you would like that a million times more than the 20%, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, so now... Now, okay, I'll take that back. I'll drop it down to 85% because this will be a little bit more of my reference point. So 85 is still a lot better than the 20%, correct?
A lot better.
A lot better. You'd want that a lot more, right? Okay, so now go to the PGA Tour statistics, right? We just mentioned 20%, you know. 20% for a PGA Tour putt is 16 feet. From 16 feet, they will make it 20% of the time, 1 out of 5. Doesn't a 16-foot shot doesn't seem very bad, does it?
I mean, if I'm 120 out and I hit it 16 feet, I feel pretty good. Yeah.
And that's close to the tour average from the fairway, you know. But we go back to the 85%. You hit it to 4 feet, you're 85%. And then we can go drop down these numbers here. 5 feet, 75%. 6 feet, 65%. 7 feet, 55%. So you look at that aspect of, you know, how much benefit you are to hit it close to the hole and how much more likely you are, you know, to make a birdie if you're that close. I mean, we just saw it right there. I mean, you know, on a chip shot, you chip to 3 feet, you're going to make that putt 95% of the time. And this is going off tour player, so, I mean, it's a little different for an amateur, but the premise is still the same. So, 3 footer, you'll make 95% of the time. You hit a fairly decent chip to 6 feet, it runs out, instead of 3 feet. Now, you're making it 30%. You're making that 65% of the time. So, now, you just got up and down over the course of 100 rounds, 30 times less than you would, all because your chip ran out 3 feet.
Yeah.
And I mean, these are things that, you know, people don't think about, people don't realize. And we mentioned this to you, we were talking this about you, you know, you mentioned you'd have a wedge in your hand, you know, little, you know, pitching wedge, sand wedge, whatever it was. And, you know, you're aiming at the middle of the green, you know, because you don't want to make bogey.
I want to be safe.
You're trying to be safe. Yes. So, and we'll go back into some of these more of these numbers. So the PGA Tour break even point where you have the exact same chance to one putt as you do three putt is about 32, 33 feet. And that's a tour player. So all of a sudden, you know, you play that wedge shot out to, you know, instead of trying to aim at the flag, you know, hit it a little right. So let's say now you hit it to 10 feet. You know, if you would hit a good shot, you hit it 10 feet. And then instead you played it safe, now you hit it to 30 feet. So now from 10 feet, you have on the PGA Tour, you have a 38% chance to make it. So you are almost 4 out of 10. So was that 2 out of 5? You're almost 2 out of 5 times you're going to make that putt. So now all of a sudden you hit it to 30 feet. You're almost at a point to where you're going to three putt just as much as you are as one putt. So
that's for tour pros. I would guess to wager that, you know, 5 handicaps like myself, and then we can go on up 10, 15 handicaps, much more likely to three putt from 30 feet than those players are to one putt from 30 feet.
Lag putting is one of the things that amateurs struggle with the most, and that's one of the things that I wish that people spend a little bit more time on.
You have to spend time on it to be able to lag putt. You just have to.
And this is the way I see it, and it'll kind of go into the premise of it. You know, if you want to keep the floor of your score high, you know, so like if you're one of those guys that can shoot kind of low, but yet you'll throw out an 85 or 90 just at random times, you know, I would say the best way to keep the floor of your score high is to, what I call it is master the third shot. So for par threes, it'll be the second shot, but even on par fives, I say the third shot because you look at the strokes gain metrics, and even on holes that are over 600 yards, the average score is like still 4.8 something. So you're still, anytime you make a five, you are losing strokes essentially. So I say master the third shot. So you think about it, you know, you have a third shot, you know, it'll be, you know, a 40-foot putt to lag up there, or it'll be a, you know, a little chip or a little pitch, or on a par five, you know, it may be a little 80-yard wedge. You know, the better you can get at those shots, the less likely you'll be to shoot, you know, a really high, like an 80 plus score if you're a five handicap or something like that. And, but at the same time, if you want to make your score, if you want to be one of those guys, you know, obviously range shot 55, you know, but if you want to be somewhere to where you can shoot those low scores, you need to be able to hit the ball close. And you need to, like I said, if you're going to make, like we said here, you know, a 3-footer you're going to make 95% of the time, an 8-footer you're going to make 50% of the time. So, I mean, you're a 45% difference on a 5-foot difference, essentially, in how far you are from the hole. So the more times that you can get that ball close to the hole, the more birdies that you'll make. So to keep the floor of your score high, master that third shot, you know, inside 100 yards, and that'll also, you know, obviously make more birdies when you do that too. But if you want to get to the point to where you're, you know, really taking your game to the next level, you got to work on that ball striking. You got to get that ball as close as you can, as many times as you can.
Yeah, exactly. And to be able to make more birdies, you're going to have to make some 15-footers. That's just part of it. But if you give yourself more opportunities to make 15-footers, you'll make more birdies.
It's all opportunity, absolutely. And, you know, like I said, the more times that you put yourself in that situation, and that's why, you know, the course management thing that we, you know, the Google Earth and everything can put so much emphasis on it, because, you know, if you're picking the wrong target line, like we mentioned earlier, you know, and you play that hole 100 times with that different target line, how many strokes did you waste, you know, because you aimed at the wrong target, and how many other times you played the hole, you put it in the bunker or the trees or the water when you shouldn't have, you know, if you had aimed at the right place, you know. And so these are all things to look at. You know, like Google Earth, I think is really interesting for one of the things I really like about it is you can see the way that green shape, even in yardage books, you can see, you know, how the green looks, but you can't tell really how it looks depending on what angle you're coming in at. You know, so a lot of times, you know, like even for the junior tournaments that play courses with a pin sheet, you know, they'll say, oh yeah, the pin is back left, okay, and it's plus whatever. So, and but you'll, you know, the green diagonals or whatever, and there's a bunker you have to carry, you know, and, you know, with the bunker diagonal, it runs diagonal with the green. So, you know, the bunker's not necessarily in the middle of the green. So if the pin's further back, you know, and the bunker runs with that way, you know, you have to carry it further than you would if the pin was further to the right, because that's just the way that the bunker runs. And those are just little things that you can kind of see on Google Earth, you know, even a course that you play all the time, a course that you're going to. These are just little tidbits. And I mean, there are a few negatives from it. You know, you can't see elevation, you know, so a lot of times that plays a little bit into it.
But if it's a course you play a lot, then you know.
Then you know exactly. Yeah. Or even if you just played one time, I mean, you're going to know.
Even
if it's somewhere, you know, if you're going out of state or whatever, you're planning a, I mean, I don't think anyone's really planning a trip right now, you know, but if you're planning a trip to Vegas or, you know, Florida, wherever you're going to play again, you know, you can just look up the course and, you know, worst case scenario, you'll be able to tell what the greens look like, you know, and you'll be able to see, you know, okay, well, maybe this looks like this, or, you know, and you can put, like you said, like Colby said, you can change it to yards and you can put the marker on the tee box. And I've done this, of course, I play. It's just as accurate as a rangefinder is. I mean, it's pinpoint.
It's incredibly accurate.
It's pinpoint accurate. So you can tell, you know, how far it is, you know, to the edge of the bunker, how far it is to carry a bunker. And we mentioned that about the way the bunker's shaped, you know. So if you're trying to, you know, stay short of a bunker and a bunker runs diagonally, well, you know, the right side, you know, if it diagonals to the left, the right side of the bunker is going to be a shorter distance than it is to the left side of the bunker, you know. And so, and on Google Earth, you can see what that difference is. So if the bunker's 20 yards long, you know, you can, and you're trying to stay short of it, you know, well, I can aim a little bit left and I have a little bit more leeway. And these are all just little things that, you know, you think at the time, oh, well, you know, it's not a big deal. I can still get up now. You know, Tiger hitting the trees all the time. You know, I can make birdies from there. You know, it's not about the one-offs, you know. It's not about the Zach Johnsons laying up at Augusta. You know, the reason that gets brought up all the time is because no one else does it. because
it's not a good strategy.
Because it doesn't work all the time.
Because the percentages of getting up and down with a wedge, your birdie percentage actually goes down when you play it the way Zach Johnson plays. Now, if you're able to execute perfectly and basically for 4 days tilt the percentages in your favor, you can do what Zach Johnson did. How many guys are going to be able to do that?
That's exactly why it gets brought up every time. And so, you know, the premise sounds good. Oh yeah, let's lay up in the fairway and we'll have a half yards every half wedge every time. Well, you have a decent chance if you're a tour player caliber to get, you know, up and down if you're under 100 yards. On the tour, you actually lose strokes if you don't get up and down from inside like 160 yards or something like that, you know. So
that's crazy.
I mean, it's like, I mean, 2.9, you know, so you're losing point, you know, if you're 150 yards and you don't get up and down, you know, you lose like 0.1 stroke or something like that, but you're still losing strokes is the premise here, you know. So You know, so you can get up and down from there, you know, so laying up. But now here's the point. What if you try to lay up in the fairway and all of a sudden you miss the fairway and now you're hitting the little wedge shot from the rough on a par five? That's where you start to lose the strokes. And that's, you know, everyone thinks, oh, well, I'm just going to, you know, hit off the tee and hit the fairway. You know, if you're someone of the caliber like Taylor Gooch, who can just bullet a three wood down there and hit it as far further than most people hit their drivers, then go for it. You know, because if you're going to hit the fairway every time, then it's, but if you're at a, to lay back, you have to essentially hit the fairway every time for it to be beneficial for you. You know, if you don't have a shot that you're hitting it literally 90% of the time, you know, like if you're debating between driver and three wood, there better be a big reason as to why you're not hitting that driver. If it's because you don't feel confident with your driver, then maybe go out and try to get fit and get into a new one. You know, if you're one of those people that hits, you know, your three wood and your iron's better than your driver, maybe a technique issue because driver's the only club that you hit up on as opposed to down. So that would be something to look into. But essentially my point is you need to be getting the ball down there as far as you can, just because, you know, you look at the break, you know, like the break even points of the percentage that you would need to, because it's about 25 yard difference essentially normally from a player's driver to three wood, you'd say, you know, somewhere around there, right?
Yeah.
So 25 yards. Now all of a sudden, you know, if you hit if you hit the fairway 50% of the time with a driver, for those 25 yards, you would have to hit the fairway probably 85 to 90% of the time with your three wood.
Can I give you a perfect example?
Perfect.
A few weeks ago, I played Golf Club of Edmond, had no confidence with my driver. I hit it 3 times that day. Yesterday, I hit my driver 10 times. 10 times in a much stronger wind. I shot 77 yesterday. I shot 82 a few weeks ago whenever I only hit it 3 times.
And you make a good point there. I mean, if you're not confident with it, then don't do it. I mean, it's like we brought up the Tiger thing with picking the shot. You know, it gives him that confidence. So whatever you're doing, make sure you're confident with it.
But you know how I got more confident with it?
You did it.
I went to the range.
And you fixed it.
I went to the range for however long we were there, 2 hours on Friday. I went to the range for another 2 hours on Saturday. And I really worked on it. And that's one thing Tiger talks about. He says in his little My Game deal, he's like, if you don't put in the work, you're not going to get the results and you don't deserve them.
That's a good point. You don't deserve them. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't. I mean, you haven't practiced. You haven't, why are you going to be better? Why are you have not hit balls since the last time you played 2 weeks ago, and 2 weeks ago you shot an 88 and today you think you're going to shoot a 78. It's not how it works.
And it's kind of like Steve Ball brought up, you know, where he'll break down, you know, the kind of the expectations, yep, you know, and say, you know, he has to kind of be real with some of his students, you know, like you want to golf twice a month and drop your handicap by 10, you know, it's not realistic, you know. Yep. And, you know, so it goes back to that self-analyzation. You have to be to real with yourself the best you can. And one of the things that Tiger brought up too that I thought, it goes back to that course management that we were talking about. You know, he said it was along the lines of something like this. You know, some guys play checkers, some guys play chess, and some guys play
elite chess.
Yes. So, and you know, that kind of goes, you know, back to the course management thing. You know, are you just picking some random target and hitting it down there, hoping to get it up there? You know, just not even thinking about where you want to play. You know, so like, you know, these guys are, I mean, they're so detailed with where they want to be, where they need to miss it, and it works for them too. You know, because they have so much ball control. You know, so they can miss in the right spots when they need to. But if they didn't know where they needed to miss it and didn't have that planned, then, you know, it's not that they're not going to have that much luck out there, you know.
Yeah, and the guys I played with yesterday, course management gives me anxiety, bro. Seriously. I mean, it's so they shot, I mean, yes, a really strong wind. The guys I played with shot like 88 and 96, I think. And the course management is a total freaking disaster. I mean, the guy that I was riding with and playing with, we were on the 16th hole out there, and there's big pond short left of the green. But it's, you can't really see it, but it's not like it's like mega blocked out. There's water that leads into it, and, you know, he makes a bad swing and hits it over there. And we see this big splash come up, and he's like, oh my gosh, there's water up there? This is the third time he's played this course in the last 3 weeks.
And he had no idea.
And he had no idea that the water was there. I'm like, I don't know how that happens. And the course, man, that was only one example. I could give you 15 more examples of poor course management from yesterday that these two made. But it's like, think about what you want to do. Think about what you want to do on the golf course. Don't just step up and, okay, this hole goes south. I'm going to step up. I'm going to hit it south. Okay, good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck. You're going to need it.
And you know, and we'll go back to kind of what Brian brought up, you know, about just playing one hole at a time, you know. And Colby had mentioned, you know, just letting the shot get past you. You know, the drive that you – besides the end of the number scorecard that you put, the drive that you hit on three is going to have no difference to what you do on hole five or six. It should have no difference.
I was really proud of myself yesterday. So after our conversation with Steve, he said, stop worrying about your score. Stop worrying about your score. And what I used to always do is on the 18th tee box, I already know what I shot on the front because you added up at the turn. So on the 18th tee box, I would look at the card and I would see how many I am over on the back. So I know on 18 tee, okay, I need to make par to shoot 75. I need to make par to birdie to shoot 77, whatever the case may be. So yesterday, we finished 17, we get to 18 tee box, and I look down at the card and I'm about to do that and I stopped myself. I was like,
caught it, the self-awareness.
I caught it because it's something that I've been thinking about lately. I've listened to that podcast with Steve a few times, and I thought it, and it's like I added up 10 and 11, and then I went, stop what you're doing. Doesn't matter how many over you are on this side. You still have to hit a good, this is a hard tee shot. You still got to hit this tee shot. You still got to execute. And I ended up birdieing 18 and didn't have any idea what I was going to shoot. It ended up being a 77, but I birdied that last hole having no idea what the score was for, and I don't know. I think that helped me to not be worried about, okay, I got to make this putt to get this score I want to shoot today.
Yeah, no, I completely, and it's, yeah, like you said, you played the hole. You didn't play the round. You know, you added it up at the end of the day, you know, and you know, some people, like you said, you know, you want to forget the bad shot and let it pass you, you know, and that's completely right. You know, like we make fun of someone like Tyrrell Hatton, you know, who's going to be going around, throwing a club, cussing, throwing a fit. Rom does the same thing, you know, but most of the time you see that it doesn't let him fluster him on the next shot. And that's something that's real important, to let it brush off of you and you know, just to move on. But at the same time, you know, like I said, it is about playing the hole, because like I said, if you do push your drive on a par four or par five or whatever, you know, you have to hit that next shot. You know, you put yourself there and you have to get out of it, you know. So it's like you're playing the hole. So then from there, you know, if you get in the trouble, you know, it goes back to, where do you miss it kind of thing. You know, it's like, do you want to put it just short of the green where you have a little uphill chip, or do you want to hit it out to the right in the deep rough where the green and wind slope away from you and you have no chance of keeping it on the green, you know? It's, you know, it's just things like that, you know, that people, like you say, people don't really think about a whole lot, but, you know, a situation like we just brought up right there, that could cost you one or two strokes immediately. And then, you know, that's, let's say you just do that, for even these tour guys, you do it once a round. Now, all of a sudden, let's say, so we'll do 1.5 strokes each round. That's three. That's 6 strokes over the course of a tournament that you blew because of one mistake you made on one hole for each day.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, it's for anyone that just wants to get out there and improve their scores, you know, it's just do things like that. Work on your short putts. Try your best to avoid penalty strokes the best you can. I mean, I talked with Colby a lot about this the other day. You know, try to work on, when you're practicing, to just get a swing to where, two different swings, a swing to where if you have trouble left, it will not go left no matter what you do. And then if there's trouble right, have a swing that will not go right no matter what you do, you know. So, you know, we talk about having, you know, you don't want the two-way miss, which is completely true, you know. But at the same time, if you're missing it one way every single time, then there's ways that you can fix that, you know, obviously. And so you can tweak that, you know. Generally, you know, a lot of times you see on the tour, you know, when someone leads and, like, say, miss right tendency, you know, it's not because they never hit it left, it's because they hit it right every time, you know what I'm saying? You know, it's not from that aspect, you know. So if you can get some grasp of ball control and just, like I said, like I was telling Colby, you know, it may start off to where you're not go left swing, you're going to hit it 80 yards right sometimes, you know. But at the same time, if you can just, you know, practice, and it goes back to how much you play too, you know. If you play twice a month, it'll be hard to get this down. But, you know, if you're a regular player, you know, and you can work on, all of a sudden that 80 yards right turns into, you know, 4, and then it just gets increasingly smaller. And then that way, you know, it's like, you know, somewhere like the course that you play, the greens, where it's built around a housing addition, so literally there's out of bounds left every single hole.
Every hole, yes.
So, and there's some holes there where trouble's right too, so, you know, you can't have that swing every time. Right. You'll need your go-to shot, like your 2-iron is that you have right now, you know. But there's some holes out there where it's like, and I have 100 yards right here that I can hit it, you know, I can you know, if I have my don't go left swing, I can make a good confident swing here because I know it's not going to go in trouble. And a lot of times what you'll do is you'll end up hitting a really good shot anyway.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's just, it's creating that confidence in your head of knowing.
Confidence.
Of knowing.
Well, Steve said, right?
Exactly. It's the belief. What he said, one student in all of his years that he's been doing
20
this.
20 years.
And has tested positively. And I don't know if.
Has tested at a tour level.
At a tour level, yeah. And I'm sure, he said, I don't believe he does that with adults, but even if he did, I guarantee you they wouldn't pass it either. You
God,
know,
no.
I mean, there's no one that does, even not just in golf, but personal life. You know, confidence is such a hard thing to find anymore, you know? So the more that you can give yourself, the better. And it's just, the more that you can think about your game, the better. Literally break it down. Like people say, you know, obviously it's not rocket science or anything, but the more that you can break it down and be self-analytical and realize what works best for you. You know, like we said, you know, Tiger and Jack Nicklaus, the two best golfers of all time, they had a score in their mind that they wanted to shoot at the end of the day, you know, and it worked for them. You know, someone else goes out and try to do it, you know, they're going to, you know, they may, like if you try to shoot two under on the day, if it's tough, you could be way under and then all of a sudden you try to guide, or you're five over or something, then all of a sudden you press on the last nine holes and then your score gets higher because you're aiming at more pins that you shouldn't or taking more aggressive lines than you should. You know, so just try to have the Rian Gibson philosophy, and like a lot of players do, you just try to play the hole at a time and have a strategy for the hole too. You know, it's like, are you going to jump in your car and try to drive somewhere you've never been without an Atlas or Google Maps on your phone?
No.
Exactly. No. Yeah. What are you going to do? Follow the sun and, okay, the sun's setting in the west, so I'm going to head west. You know, that's not, you know, that's not how it works.
It's a bad strategy.
It's a bad strategy. And so if you take that strategy on the course, your bad strategy is going to lead to bad results. You know, it's like Tiger said, you don't deserve them.
Absolutely. A lot of great stuff we got into today. I think later this week, we're going to spit out a player profile. We've got a few players still in the tank. Don't know who we're going with, but Friday we will have a player profile for you one way or another. We enjoy doing those. We did Spieth and Reed a little bit earlier in the offseason. Then we dove into a ton of great interviews. And by the way, if you've missed any of those, go back and listen to them. I'm sure I'll miss some, but we had Scott Tway on with us last week. Had some great stories. Mal Baker, those are the two caddies that we've interviewed. Scott Tway is on right now with Brian Harmon. And then Mal Baker's on with Taylor Gooch. We interviewed Rian Gibson.
Sam Humphries, yeah, Taylor Ball, Moore, yeah. Taylor Gooch, Steve Ball, Mike McGraw,
Craig Humphries,
and we've just gotten so much great response from all these great people we've been able to interview. You know, not only because they were so kind to come on our show, but also, you know, they were able to come on and share the knowledge that they've learned through their experience with the game. And like we mentioned, how many ever times on the show with all the misconceptions and stuff there are out there about golf, the more pure golf knowledge that you can spread out there, you know, that's what's truly going to grow the game. You know, whenever you're just throwing fake news and fake stuff out there and making people's game worse, you know, that's what's making this game shrink. And so having the great people on that we've had has done nothing but help spread the game, and we couldn't thank the people that have come on enough.
Yeah, absolutely, including Kelsey Klein, who was with us earlier in this episode. So a lot of fun we've had with everybody. We're going to shoot out a player profile later in the week. Thanks for listening once again. You can find us on all social media platforms. Search 73rd Hole. You will find us. Also, wherever you're listening to this podcast, take 1 minute right now, rate and subscribe to this podcast. We would greatly, greatly appreciate it. You can find Taylor and I individually on Twitter at Colby J. Powell, at @T_Williams101. Hit us up if there's any players you would like us to profile. Let us know, and we will make sure to give the people what they want. We're back later in the week. Thanks for listening to another episode of the 73rd Hole.